Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored in part by Takeda, we had the pleasure of hearing from Elias Jabbour, MD, a professor in the Department of Leukemia and Division of Cancer Medicine at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. Dr. Jabbour joined us to discuss updates from the 2021 ASH Annual Meeting and Exposition in Chronic Myeloid Leukemia, including findings from the Phase 3 ASCEMBL trial evaluating asciminib versus bosutinib and data with ponatinib from a post-hoc analysis of the Phase 2 OPTIC trial. In October 2021, the FDA granted an accelerated approval to asciminib for the treatment of patients with Philadelphia chromosome positive CML in chronic phase who were previously treated with at least two TKIs. The agent also received full approval for patients with Ph positive CML in any phase who present with a T315I mutation. Ponatinib is also approved for the same indications. In this episode, Dr. Jabbour reviewed new data with asciminib and ponatinib in the post-second generation TKI setting.
Thank you very much for inviting me today to be part of this program. Today, I want to talk about CML and asciminib, the new kid in block added to the treatment in CML. In fact, asciminib, it's different than ponatinib or other TKIs. In a way, it binds to the myristoyl pocket to inhibit the BCR-ABL. Which is different than the prior TKIs. They're using the ATP binding site to inhibit the BCR-ABL. So this is different. It's what we call the stamp class of drugs. And the asciminib was already assessed in a phase one study with the recommended phase two dose for 40 milligram BID. And then with dose escalation, we identify 200 milligram BID as appropriate dose for patient harboring the TP53 mutation. The ASCEMBL trial was a randomized trial, a phase three trial, where patients who failed two TKIs at least and do not have TP53 mutation nor V200L mutation were randomized on a 2-to-1 to either asciminib 40 milligram twice daily or bosutinib 500 milligram once daily, the approved dose for patients who failed prior TKIs. The study was done, patients were stratified by MCYR and no MCYR, and at the baseline, and the primary endpoint was the rate of MMR at 24 weeks. Just to compare these two groups of patients, 157 patients were receiving asciminib. Again, these patients do not have TP53 mutation, and 61 had bosutinib. The primary endpoint, as I said, was MMR at 24 weeks. It was 25% in favor of asciminib, compared to 13.2% with bosutinib. So higher rate of MMR seen with asciminib, that is the primary endpoint that led to the approval of the drug. Now, what we know as well, that patient enrolled here, they should have failed two prior TKIs. Some of them were resistant, some of them were intolerant, but it's important to note that among patients who had three TKIs and more, 48% with asciminib, 61% with bosutinib, so more so with bosutinib had resistant TKIs. And if we look at the level of disease, some of them had no disease whatsoever, below 1% BCR-ABL sin, being 9% with asciminib compared to 5% with bosutinib. So still, it's a randomized trial, and the results were in favor of asciminib. Now, at this ASH meeting, we have a long-term follow-up of the study at 48 weeks, and the advantage is still in favor of asciminib. Now, I would like to highlight there were more discontinuation with bosutinib compared to asciminib. The rate was, 70% of patients who received bosutinib had to stop the drug compared to 38% with asciminib. So intolerance is an issue here. But still, the drug was better than bosutinib and led to the approval. So higher rate of CCYR with a long-term follow-up in favor of asciminib compared to bosutinib by week 24 and by week 48. Again, that led to the approval of asciminib. Now, that being said, one good question is, well, why not comparing asciminib to ponatinib? That has not been done yet, and we'll be eager to see the data comparing ponatinib to asciminib, but that has not been done. So moving into ponatinib was approved a long time ago as a third-generation tyrosine kinase inhibitor effective against TP53 mutation and other mutations. The drug was approved at the dose of 45 milligrams per day. There was inpatient who failed multiple TKIs, two and more, acquiring T59 mutation or none, primary resistant or none. So the patients enrolled were really heavily pretreated, more than three TKIs, the vast majority. With that, half of the patients were able to achieve a CCYR, a complete response, and responses were durable. Now, with ponatinib at 45 milligrams per day, we did see vascular events, unfortunately, encountered. These vascular events were seen mainly in patients at 45 milligrams per day, and in patients at high risk of vascular events. Therefore, the drug was placed on hold for a short time because of the vasoocclusive events. And then after that, there was a trial called OPTIC trial done where patients and the dose optimization of ponatinib. We know from the phase one, phase two study originally done, then we adjust the dose when we lower the dose of ponatinib, we can optimize the outcome. Patients were randomized, at least 2 TKIs and more, were randomized to ponatinib at 45 milligram and reduction to 15 once the BCR labels of 1% or less was obtained. 30 milligram reduced to 1%, reduced to 15 milligram once the BCR label is at 1% or less, and 50 milligram all along, the primary endpoint being the rate of 1% BCR transcript at 12 months. In this study, the investigators have shown that dose optimization 45 to 15 were the winner. In a way, it does offer the best efficacy and the best safety, and the ratio safety efficacy was the best. And this led to the change of the label of ponatinib being 45 and 15. So I put this together to highlight the abstract 310 and put in perspective with ponatinib. So we have ponatinib and asciminib. They'll never be compared together. The asciminib was compared to bosutinib, and ponatinib was approved based on a phase 2 study and then dose optimization. In the ASSEMBLE trial, we already reported mutations occurring in the binding site of asciminib, similarly what we've seen with the ATP binding site with the other TKIs. In fact, already patients are expressing mutations, and there was a rationale to combine asciminib with the other TKIs, and that is ongoing right now. This is number one. Number two, things to consider is already with the short follow-up, there were 5% rate of vasoocclusive events to be seen. Mechanistically, we do not know how, but that's something to keep in mind as well. And finally, the dose of asciminib is different whether you prescribe it for non-T59 mutation, which is 40 milligram twice daily, or T59 mutation, which is 200 milligrams twice daily, based on a separate phase 2 study done. And of course, the price play a role here, because then you have to pay more for those with the T59 mutation. So far with ponatinib, we have 10 years of follow-up. It's extremely effective. I think it's one of the most effective TKIs available. I started 45 mainly in T59 mutation and then reduced the dose and maintain it. We've investigated drug in PH-positive ALL as well, where you have a lot of T59 mutation. And 45 reduction to 15 was found to be safe and effective. No, you tell me somebody with the vascular events had MI recently, I will not be encouraged to use ponatinib. For this patient, I may use asciminib, but then I have to be cautious as well. Even with asciminib, yes, the rate of vascular event is lower, but the follow-up is still shorter. I will be more inclined to use asciminib for these patients. At my institution, it has been using second-gen TKI upfront, ponatinib, and then asciminib thereafter. The 307 post-hoc analysis of response of ponatinib in patients with chronic myeloid leukemia by baseline BCR-ABL mutation, because people say, do we need 45 for everybody? So in an OPTIC trial, the dose was 45 milligrams per day for all comers and reduced to 15, 30 and 15 and 15 along. They did not decide based on mutation profile. So in this abstract, Dr. Michael Deiniger showed the data by mutations. So essentially the message is for 315I mutation upfront, you need 45 because at the lower dose, the rate of CCYR were lower. And we see an advantage in PFS in 45 milligram per day compared to 30 and 15. The survival, no difference so far yet. Therefore, I think for 359 mutation, I will always check for mutation at the baseline, start with 45 milligram per day, and then reduce the dose later on. If somebody had no mutation, or other mutation, I think still an advantage for 45 milligram per day. But you ask me the question, somebody with no mutation whatsoever, and I'm not comfortable with 45, I think 30 and 15 is reasonable. So in my practice, 45 is my first choice. But then if somebody had no mutations and I'm concerned about hypertension or other vascular risk factors, I may use 30 milligram and 15, and the data is reassuring in that sense. Finally, the last abstract presented was 2550, dose modification dynamics of ponatinib in chronic phase leukemia from the PACE and OPTIC trial I presented myself. In a PACE trial, the original trial that led to the approval of ponatinib, the dose adjustment was based on adverse events because you get 45 and you have adverse events, you reduce to 15, 30, and 15, you see what's going on. We've shown that dose adjustment did not compromise efficacy. In a PACE, in OPTIC trial, the dose adjustment was based on efficacy. So you don't have to wait for the safety concerns to happen to reduce the dose. And by adjusting based on a response and efficacy, we had a better outcome. Therefore, this reassuring in two ways. Number one, you do not need full dose all along. Number two, reduce the dose based on dynamic of response is better than wait for safety concerns. It will preserve and give you a best long-term outcome. And therefore, today, that led to the change of the label of the drug where you adjust the dose based on response. And we have plenty of data on that today, and that has become standard of care.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored in part by Takeda. Check back on Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.